and Tis the Law has the lead at the top of the stretch. It is Tis the Law in front with 3/16 to the finish. Tis the Law has a four-length lead. He's left the others behind.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga. Just minutes from the track. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime, with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Friday Hall of Fame Day, live from our Clare Court set. I'm Seth Merrill. Thanks for joining us. Should be a fun edition of Racing Across America. In town to do the Whitney broadcast on NBC tomorrow. Our friends Randy Moss and Jerry Bailey will join us in a few. And I was saying on the handicapping show, I think it's been a couple of years since we had them in here with the pandemic and whatnot. 1 year, I'm not even sure, 2 years ago, I'm not even sure they were here. They may have been doing a Travers remotely. Last year, we didn't get a chance to have them, so we're anxious to have Randy and Jerry back with us. That'll be in a few minutes towards the end of the program. Michelle Giangiulio will join us. She had a nice winner with Tiergan the other day. For our friend Marshall Graham, we had Marshall in the other day, 10-strike racing. We'll catch up also. Their Seafoam should be coming up in the Evan Shipman a little bit later on. We'll get an update on him and what to look for in that race, so we'll talk about that and more with Michelle Giangiulio. But as always on a Friday, happy to be visited by the team from the Saratoga Special on this Friday morning. It's our friend Tom Law. Tom, good morning.
Morning, Seth. Good to be here. Finally. I made my appearance.
Happy to have you in the rotation.
Yeah, I was supposed to be in the rotation a few weeks ago. We kind of had some issues with scheduling, but good to be on set.
Great. Scheduling is always something with the Saratoga Special. You guys running around. Now at least you have the office that's right across the street. Yeah. That makes it a little easier than bouncing downtown, which was the case for years and years. And we were talking when you sat down because you have an issue out today, which so far this season has been a little bit different. But you guys have mentioned when we've had you in here already, sales week leads into that. So just give us the update on what the special schedule will be, you know, today going forward.
Yeah, that's right. So normally our schedule is twice a week, Wednesday and Saturday. But for the sales week / Hall of Fame / Whitney weekend, we go Friday starting today, Hall of Fame issue. We got some stories about Beholder and Teppin in there. And then we'll run all the way through Wednesday. So we'll have, you know, Whitney tomorrow, Whitney recap, then like sales preview type stuff. Probably Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday sales coverage on Tuesday, obviously from the first night, and then we have the kind of slide right back into the Wednesday schedule. So it's a run of six straight papers in a row. Kind of harkens back to the old days, way back when we used to do around sales time. We did about 13 in a row, which was an absolute bear. But that's when we used to do about four or five papers a week back then. You know, times have changed. Sort of the cards are a little different now. Everything's so loaded towards the weekend, so we sort of shifted our schedule a little bit. You know, and we think that the work is a little bit better. I think the stories are a little better. We have a little more time to work on them. You know, like after last weekend, it was just such a big weekend. It was great to sort of digest them and get into them, you know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, kind of get them coming out on Wednesday.
And again, you can pick up the special if you're on track. There are racks all around the track. Highly recommended to pick it up around town. You can find it around town at the various convenience stores, supermarkets, and whatnot. And if you're not in the area, if you're watching us on YouTube or Roku or whatever, go to thisishorseracing.com and you can always check it out there. And also on the days, even the days you don't publish, the picks are there, the handicappers there.
That's right.
Trapezian, once again,
doing
very well.
We started a new thing. We sort of rebranded the off day picks. We call it the Thursday special or the Friday special, the Sunday special. Those are the 3 days that we normally don't print. And we've actually thrown some of our usual content in there. We got some worth repeating stuff, some by the numbers, little stories maybe, and also the picks. We do names of the day, but we do the picks in there. And, you know, you're going to want John Trapezian's picks. I don't know if you saw yesterday, but he had 8 of 10 winners yesterday.
He had 8 of 10?
He had 8.
Oh, I saw the total here, and I thought, oh, I thought I was doing pretty well. I'm sitting with like 45. He's at 53.
Eight.
He had eight. I won shot yesterday.
Three, maybe four, and I'm like losing ground.
Eight.
And he had eight in his two races he lost. He was second in one, and he was third in the other. I mean, I don't know what got into him. Somebody said, you must have been talking trash to him or whatever. I said, I didn't say a word to him. You know, he's in the zone right now. I mean, Charles Bedard was off to a very fast start, who always does really well for us. And then it was like, oh, we got us a three-horse race. You know, I got myself back in the mix. And then John, of course, he spurts away yesterday. So
and he always does very well. So, again, recommended to pick up the copy or check out online the days you can't get the copy because the picks are there. This is horseracing.com. Eight. Yikes.
He's the king. Yeah.
And as I say, I only had one. So now I'm chasing this weekend. You mentioned last weekend, and I pulled up a replay, and I'll just let you address it a little bit as well. It was a Steve Asmussen's world, and we all live in it. Jackie's Warrior Epicenter on Sunday. I wasn't quite sure what to do with Gunite, but he looked good. We'll have a replay here of the Vanderbilt, though. Yeah. That was one of the, you know, it's good. Number four horse in the Vanderbilt. About the top of the stretch, I think, is this going to be a horse race? No, it's not going to be a horse race. Going to run away. The chart margin winds up to be a couple, but it was much easier than that. Just, you know, your reflection on Asmussen's weekend and Jackie's Warrior Epicenter.
I don't know that I've ever seen a horse win a grade one or any stake
totally
the way he did it. You know, it was like a workout, you know, in a lot of ways. And, I mean, he laid over the field, obviously, on class, but those are still like some pretty decent sprinters that were in there. I mean, but just Jackie's Warriors in another world. And, you know, in a lot of ways, Steve Asmussen, I was just saying to you off air, you know, he's best at what American racing is best at, you know, dirt racing, colts racing, sprinting, but also he's amazing with his route horses. You know, you look at over the years, the Curlins and the Gun Runners, what he did with Rachel Alexandra, developing her on, you know, past when he took over training her. You know, and now Epicenter, of course, wins the Jim Dandy like he's, you know, supposed to. And then Gunite. I mean, go figure, he's like 5-6 to 1 in there. I mean, I guess if Corniche is not in the race, you know, you might center on Gunite. Corniche kind of the big question mark. I loved Gunite in the paddock. I was telling Sean, I really loved him. Sean's like, "You that's a good pick, you know, great pick." I was like, I didn't pick him in the paper. Sean's like, "Oh, you wimp, you know, you wimped out." But I bet him, so I was happy about that. You know, it's funny when we do, you know how it is, you do the picks in advance, and then sometimes you get to the track and your opinions may change. You get to the paddock, you just get a little different feeling, you kind of see how the day's going. You're like, man, I'm going to focus on this. I mean, and Steve Asmussen just, I mean, he doesn't need me to introduce him. He's going to be at the Hall of Fame ceremony probably today. There's a reason why he's in the Hall of Fame. And he just showed it again last weekend.
Yeah, that's a good consolation prize, though. You don't have it on top, but you have it on top in your wallet. There are days when I do that, too.
Yeah.
It bounces out.
I try not to brag too much about that, because then people are like, what are you talking about? But I can always counter by saying, well, our newspaper is free. Yeah. You know, so
I like that.
It's not like you're paying for my picks.
I've had the same thing. And as I say, it kind of balances out.
Exactly.
I wanted to touch also on yesterday because you have a recap of it in today's paper, Art Collector yesterday. You know, the question mark for Art Collector. I put the horse on top, but it was coming out of a poor performance in the Saudi Cup, poor performance in the Breeders' Cup Classic. What did you do? My feeling was he comes back and even loses a few points. He probably has the edge on the field, and he looked really good yesterday.
He did. Yeah, and I mean, just the tactics, you know, kind of won the race. I mean, he's a horse that has speed. You know, got away to a pretty easy first quarter, even slower second quarter is kind of what I wrote about. Dave Grenning from the forum actually asked Mott about it, and I was, you know, I always like it sometimes when another reporter asks a good question that you might be thinking of, and then you give them the assist a little bit. But 49 and change, a horse like that with his kind of quality is going to be awfully tough to beat. Masquerade ran a pretty nice race to be second. He's a nice horse. Good to see him kind of coming back after, you know, kind of disappointing run in the Travers last year. Al Stahl's done a great job bringing him along at four. And, you know, he could make some noise in some of these races down the road, you know, Charlestown Classic, Lucas Classic, races like that, along with Art Collector. I think they're going to go the same route with him. Bruce Lunsford had a good time at Charlestown last year and maybe run back. You know, it's a little tight for the Woodward, unfortunately, but, you know, there's some sounds like there's going to be some decent horses kind of lining up for the Woodward as well. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe we'll get some from the Whitney. We'll see. But, yeah, the Woodward, I'm glad it's a – or the Jockey Club Gold Cup, I'm saying the Woodward.
Yeah.
But Bill Mott did mention the Woodward back at Belmont, also for our collector. But, yeah, the Jockey Club at the end of the meet, mile and a quarter, I'm glad to see that at least the races aren't still both of them at 9 furlongs, the Whitney and the Woodward like it used to be. Good to have that mile and a quarter at the end.
It is hard to get those straight because it took so long to get used to having the Woodward at Saratoga.
Uh-huh.
And then just when you got used to that, they changed it and
it's
put
gone.
That back down at Belmont and then Jockey Club Gold Cup. Let's get some
ideas
because you're also in the handicapping box
at
the Saratoga Special. Let's get some ideas on this afternoon, the Hall of Fame. I said earlier, love that subdivision of three-year-olds on the turf. I think it's a good group in here. I tilted towards Ready to Perform.
Mm-hmm.
I think Celestial City is interesting. Double Clutch being lightly raced. Chance O scares me a little bit. Wit, I didn't know what to do with. We had Mike Rapoli in here the other day. He said, you know, horse is working pretty good on turf.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what to do with Wit. What did you see in the Hall of Fame?
Well, yeah, Wit is kind of the X factor.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to see what he's going to do. I mean, I originally thought maybe when Todd was talking about stretching him out or trying something different with him, I didn't even think turf.
Yeah.
But, you know, he has worked him a few times on the grass. He's worked well. Like, his times look good. I guess his you know, from all reports, the Clocker's report sounds like it's a pretty good workout. So he's sort of the X factor. It's funny, all the horses you mentioned, I'm like off those. I'm not necessarily against them, but I like Double Clutch for Rusty Arnold. Thought he ran a really nice race last time, coming from off of it, you know, coming back from a couple months off, ran a nice race to be
kinda
second,
like the confidence
to Annapolis
too. They come out of the maiden win and go right to a stake, and he runs well,
and to Annapolis, who's going to be one of the major players in the Saratoga Derby, you know, is a serious horse, and Tiz the Bomb, anxious to see him get back on the grass, shortening back up to a mile. I think the last race is just a little bit, you know, too much for him. Of course, the Kentucky Derby, you know, a dirt race. I'm not sure they're trying to make him a dirt horse. He's not really a dirt horse. So I like him in there as well.
Yeah, again, it's a very interesting addition.
Yeah.
Let's take a look at some of the action tomorrow.
Yeah.
And let's kick it off in the big race. Get some opinions there in the Whitney.
Yeah.
I'm going to be interested to see how it shakes out betting-wise and where public handicappers go and whatnot, because I think – to me, it's kind of razor thin between Life is Good and Olympiad.
Yeah.
Life is Good is just so good. And coming out of, you know, Todd Pletcher, I asked him the other day why the 7 furlongs in the Nehru coming back from Dubai. And he said, you know, timing-wise, it fit. And it just all worked out well to get us ready for this race. And I think off of that, I tilted slightly in his favor. But boy, Olympiad is just an incredibly improved four-year-old.
Yeah.
And American Revolution, I think...
Yeah.
Rebounded nicely to get the confidence builder running second in the Foster behind Olympiad last time. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, American Revolution ran a much improved race. You know, I think they ran him at Churchill first time around. They wanted to run him in the New York Bred Stakes.
Yeah, Todd said that wasn't the game. The blame was not the game.
They couldn't get it filled, so they sort of forced him in there. Todd even said, you know, he wasn't totally sure what to expect. You know, it was 2 turns versus 1 turn. Then he came back, ran a really, you know, never say die kind of hard trying at the end race in there. New York Bred, he's a grade one winner already, going to be a nice horse. Actually, Todd's other horse, Happy Saver, is a horse that I think is very interesting. A lot of people have been talking about the track here being a little bit tiring, being a little bit laboring. He's a horse that really wants to go further. So, like, if the mile and eighth plays more like a mile and 3/16, that could play into his hand. He's kind of a grinder, you know, runs a great race to Flightline last time, a little bit under the radar to be second in there. You know, obviously no threat to Flightline in there, but, you know, he's a horse that's got a lot of quality. And, I mean, obviously Life is Good and Olympiad are the two to beat. But, you know, I'm leaning towards a little Happy Saver in the upset, maybe.
All right,
I got a gain on Trapezian somehow.
Well, you'll gain ROI-wise, I think, if you get that.
Yeah,
one.
I hope so.
I would have to think. And finally, let's take a look at the lure a little bit earlier on the card. I thought Sifting Sands, I had a bankroll promotion last year. I was playing on behalf of some customers with a show parlay, and he played into a big result there. So I'm a little bit married to Sifting Sands. But off the last race, I think very playable. Public sector, also for Chad.
Yep.
Mike Maker, some like it. Hot Brown, like Saratoga. I have no argument there either. What did you see in the lore?
Well, I spent the morning today with Phil Serpy for a story.
His
you know,
Queen's
little
Plate
preview.
Winner.
Yeah, a little Queen's Plate winner. I was like, man, it's kind of cool to have the Queen's Plate winner back at Saratoga. We've had Queen's Plate winners, obviously, here before. It's kind of a, you know, it's not really a handicapping angle per se, but you know, he's a horse that ran those good races last year down there, ran some good races late in the season, kind of came back in the Tropical Derby. Phil really liked his race in there. He's running against Never Surprise, who was about as good as you could be at that point. He likes the progression in the horse coming off the stake last time. You know, second to another Chad Brown horse in here. Chad's obviously going to factor in a big way. But, you know, something like a Hot Brown's pretty dangerous kind of horse. New York bred. It gets going on the lead sometimes when he runs his race. You know, back in his native state, you know. Maybe a prep for the West Point down the road. Yeah. So he's a horse that could factor in there with Cross Border, you know, another New York bred for Maker. So it's a good race.
Yeah, it's a fun race, definitely. Yeah. On a fun card tomorrow. Oh, and you guys will be previewing and reviewing all of it on the Saturday, in the Saturday and Sunday editions of the Saratoga Special. Again, you can pick it up around town or check out thisishorseracing.com. Tom, we always appreciate the visit.
Absolutely. Thanks
Good
for
luck
having
over
me.
The weekend. I don't know, since I'm kind of, you know, chasing you guys as well. I don't know how much good luck I should wish you guys.
I know.
Because, what, was it 2 years ago? We came down to the last day, and you and I were, amongst the public handicappers, we were vying for second place, and you got me by one on
I'm
the
always
last
a bridesmaid.
Day.
I can't beat Chapazian.
We were both chasing Sapazian, but we were getting bragging rights on the second place finish. And you
he's tough. He's tough. Yeah, we'll see. All right. I started three for the first weekend, so I'm doing significantly better.
So. There you go. Tom, appreciate it. And,
absolutely.
Again, pick up the Saratoga Special whenever. It is highly recommended. All right, we'll take a break. They're here. It's Randy Moss and Jerry Bailey. They're in town for Whitney coverage on NBC this weekend. We'll have them up sitting next to us in a few. Stay tuned.
For four generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922, 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Hello everyone, I'm Scott Vartley and I'm here at the West Condominiums in Saratoga Springs. And guess what? We are down to the home stretch. Everything is two bedrooms and two baths. Come make a selection of one of the greatest condos ever to be built in Saratoga Springs. We're starting in the upper fives and the only rooftop penthouse available now under construction. Wow, just look at this patio. We have a rooftop pool, heated garage, balconies, and a gym. Call me at 518-281-6808.
Test. And they're off. Preferred option breaks alertly. And here comes Carson Hollow right from the beginning on the inside, and she's in front. It's Carson Hollow, the leader. Bold World, though, is right there with her on the outside, running along in second. Short Note third. Spring Meadow is fourth. Then Preferred option. You is at the back of the pack. She's five lengths from undefeated Carson Hollow. The trailer is Proper Gamble. Carson Hollow takes the field through a quarter in 21-3. Sensational. Carson Hollow, a torrid pace here as the field moves into the far turn. But not far behind her is Bold World. She's just a length behind. Spring Meadow's in between horses. Short Note down toward the inside. Preferred option, Proper Gamble. And the favorite U is last. The favorite U is last with three furlongs to go. The half in 44 1/5 seconds. They're moving toward the quarter pole. It's still Carson Hollow. Carson Hollow is the leader. Here comes Spring Meadow. Spring Meadow with a burst of energy trying to come on through in between horses. Oh, and she got shut up. You trying to squeeze through on the inside. Oh, a daring move there by Jerry Bailey. And on the far outside, Proper Gamble. Bold World in with a fighting chance. One furlong to go. And here comes you on the inside of Carson Hollow. And these two are nip and tuck. There's absolutely nothing between them. You's in so tight. Carson Hollow is unwavering. These two and a dramatic finish. It's a photo finish that doesn't deserve a loser. You
the test stakes. Spring Meadow was third. The final time was...
Welcome back to Racing Across America, and as promised before the break, and how appropriate after watching one of the great all-time races at Saratoga. We are joined now by Randy Moss and Jerry Bailey. And Jerry, I will let you reminisce a little bit. And again, when people talk about great races at Saratoga, that is always in the conversation. And we were talking a little bit while it was on there, and you were talking about the hole you aimed for. Just recollect on that incredible victory in the test.
My first impression is, what the hell was I thinking going through that? Oh my God.
That was the old Jerry Bailey.
Yeah, right. It was my only option. You know, I don't know if she was the favorite or not. I think she probably was. And she didn't get away from the gate all that well. So, I mean.
Yeah, you're sitting last down the back
stretch.
Yeah,
there were very few options. So you just play the hand that's dealt you, as they say.
Yeah, one of the best rides and one of the best race calls.
That's that. The call
unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
And again, one of my. A lot of people, the test up here annually is one of the favorite races, and when you have an event like that, as I say, it goes down in Saratoga history. We were talking when you guys sat down. It's been a couple of years with the pandemic. You've been kind of broadcasting remotely, and when I got here beginning of the season, and we're in the back stretch, and when I drive up the front, I go around the clubhouse turn. The NBC set wasn't there. I thought with the shoot, what's going to happen? But the couple of days ago, all of a sudden it appeared. So you guys, everything is back to normal, it seems like, here at Saratoga with the NBC crew.
They tore it down for the construction of the chute, and then they rebuilt it, and it looks exactly the same. And we're going to be in the same spot. Right? The only thing different here is, like, I'm used to being in the middle.
Right.
And Jerry's used to being on the end, and there's a strategic reason for that. I like being in the middle. So it doesn't happen very often on NBC, but especially with the host we have now. But occasionally we've had some hosts that maybe didn't know that much about horse racing. And when you're in the middle, and you're the host on the end, and if the host asks what turns out to be kind of a dumb question, if I'm in the middle, I can always just turn to Jerry.
Then it lands on me.
Then it lands on Jerry. And I get the deer in the headlights look from Jerry like, oh my gosh, where am I going to go with this?
And then what would be good is if you, and then there's nobody there. So then it comes back to you.
Yes.
Well, that's why television isn't that much different for me than race riding, because you could just see what happened at the start. I had to adapt, and you know. So Randy makes me go through small holes that I don't always like to go through on set there.
Yeah, there's an analogy working there. I know how it works, believe me. Just before we get into the nuts and bolts of the race and some thoughts, NBC, what's the coverage coming up on Saturday for the Whitney?
It's an hour, NBC Mothership, from 5 to 6. We cover the test about 9 minutes in, and then the Whitney three-quarters of an hour through.
And as I say, it's been a little bit different the past couple of years. Are you happy to be back in town?
We were just driving up on the golf cart, and I told him, I said, it's nice to be back on the track, especially Saratoga. I mean, 2 years ago I did it from my home. And then last year we did it from the studio. He's been in the studio mostly when I was home, but it's so nice to be back with the fans and see the horses close up.
Yeah.
Because I really like being able to watch horses in the morning and in the afternoon.
Yeah. You know, one thing COVID has done, not just to TV broadcasting, but to, you know, other occupations, is that people discovered during COVID there are different ways you can do things and still accomplish the same ultimate objective. And so during COVID, when we by necessity had to do all these shows from the studio, people were like, oh, wow, you don't have to be at the racetrack to do all these shows, you know, and they still look good and you can do them and it comes out okay. And so most of our shows now, you'll notice, are from the studio. Fortunately, the two Saratoga shows, this and the Jockey Club Gold Cup, we get to be here on the side.
I mean, if you're doing a race from here or from Del Mar, you want to be here, you want to be at Del Mar. I will compliment you, because we have also come into the Zoom generation, and when I'm in the studio the rest of the year we Zoom in a lot of people, and I laugh because I had a television production company for years, so it just jumps out at me. Most people have their computer like this and they're using the camera in the computer, which means the camera is lower, so you're looking at everybody's ceiling, and I always raise up the, but you were perfect, and you have a great background. You have a little eighth pole behind you in your library.
Bought at Saratoga, by the way.
I give you, you're one of the better background people on Zoom.
I appreciate that.
Let's talk a little bit about the Whitney tomorrow, and I pulled up a replay going back to the Stephen Foster Olympiad, who has just been spectacular now as a four-year-old. He's going to be the number three horse. Nice rebound effort from number two, American Revolution. I talked to Todd the other day, and he said the blame where the horse started the season, a little disappointing. That wasn't their game plan. So American Revolution, I think, rebounded nicely. So these two, I think, are players on Saturday, but they have to get by. Life is good. I talked to Leandro Mora, the assistant to Doug O'Neill, the other day. I think he's kind of high on Hot Rod Charlie. Let's go one by one here. Jerry, we'll get your thoughts first. Tomorrow's Whitney.
Well, it's top three, Life is Good, Olympiad, and Hot Rod Charlie, to me, are very, very close. They have question marks. Life is Good, does he really want a mile and an eighth? I know he won the Pegasus, but this track at Saratoga this year is a lot different in consistency than Gulfstream Park. It's not as speed-friendly, so he may struggle the last 16th. Hot Rod Charlie, he's consistent, but he doesn't win a lot. He's there a lot, but there's a lot of seconds in his resume. Olympiad, I don't know if he's quite this good, but he's a fighter. And when it comes down to heads and necks and half a lengths, Olympiad fights a lot.
And he's been an overachiever. And what's interesting about Olympiad is if you go back and you look at his last, four or five races, it's like they're all an instant replay. They're like a carbon copy, like a complete reproduction from one race to the next to the next. He breaks sharply. He makes his own luck. He puts himself in a perfect tactical position. And then the rider just sits there in second behind the pace setter and then goes from there. And he takes some riding, right? He's not a push-button kind of horse with that instant acceleration. But he's been getting the job done. And will he be able to run down Life is Good? Now that's the question. One more note. We probably won't see American Revolution running tomorrow.
Okay.
If it rains and the track is sloppy, they're more likely to run him. But they don't think he's as good as Life is Good.
Yeah.
So their thinking is put him interim as a precaution just to make sure that Life is Good gets to the race okay. If it's wet, run him. If it's dry, probably wait for the Jockey Club Gold Cup where he'll be the favorite, I would think, at that point.
Any thoughts on Hot Rod Charlie? Again, the top two we've been talking about seem to have the edge. But Hot Rod Charlie, that was some ding-dong battle in the last start with Mind Control down the Salvatore Mile. He came up short, but, boy, they put on quite a performance there.
But Mind Control's a fighter. So don't diminish the head beat that much. As I said a second ago, he doesn't win a lot, but he's always there. But when you hook a horse like Mind Control, I've seen him fight off top sprinters.
He's got a way of doing
regularly. That. So he's really a fighter. So that's even a better race than what you think with Hot Rod Charlie. He's going to be in the mix. I think he'll save the ground on the first turn. And because I think this race ultimately between these three horses will come down to less than a length at the wire, to me, ground saving is going to be important.
Now, here's the scenario for Hot Rod Charlie, okay? Let's just assume that because of the longer stretch and because of the deeper surface, that Life is Good struggles at a mile and an eighth, okay? He's going to set the pace. Olympiad's probably going to be sitting second. Hot Rod Charlie's probably going to be sitting third, okay? Olympiad goes up after Life is Good, okay? And even if Life is Good doesn't see out the entire mile and an eighth, he's probably going to fight. And then Olympiad's going to lock up with him in a fight. May not be able to get by him right away. And Hot Rod Charlie's going to be sitting there waiting maybe to pick up the pieces late if both those horses get a little leg weary.
And I will ask your opinion on the division as a whole by tossing in Flightline. I wish they were all facing off here this Saturday, tomorrow afternoon, but that's not so. But give us your thought. You know, it's hard to think in memory of a horse with one start that has gotten the buzz this year, that one start this season that has gotten the buzz this horse has got. But thoughts on Flightline so far?
I think we both agree he's the leader of the division, clearly. I had some question marks going into the Met Mile, but after what he went through in that race, breaking poorly, getting steady twice in the first, 3/16 of a mile, still coming on, overcoming that and winning going away, he, to me, is clearly the best horse in the country in the older division.
Yeah. But I think I don't know if we both have him rated exactly the same, but we both vote in this poll, the Breeders' Cup Classic poll, and I've got Flightline 1, Life is Good 2, Olympiad 3. You might have Olympiad 2?
No, I have, I don't know, I'll have to look. It's about the same six or seven horses.
Two of the top three horses in the country, in our estimation, Breeders' Cup Classic contenders in the division running in the Whitney.
This race and the Pacific Classic then set things up for that showdown in the Breeders' Cup. I'd love to see Flightline here this weekend, but it's setting things up for down the road. you guys at NBC cover the Derby and the three-year-old scene, so I wanted some thoughts on the three-year-olds as well, with the Travers around the corner and the Jim Dandy just having Ben Ron, the Haskell with Cyberknife, who I think inserted himself into the conversation as well. But I think that the wild card, I think, is Charge It. And we're going to show the Dwyer here and take a look at Charge It. And as the summer plays out, we'll learn more about him. Epicenter looked very good. And we also have a little replay of the Jim Dandy from last weekend. But from both of you, let's get at this point in the year. I said a few weeks ago, I didn't think the first half of the year was defining the three-year-olds, and I thought the summer would help out with the Haskell, the Jim Dandy, the Travers, the Pennsylvania Derby. I'm not sure Cyberknife sorted things out in particular, but Epicenter certainly stepped in the forefront again. But as they say, Charge at the wild card. At this point in the season, how do you see the three-year-olds?
Well, that's the kind of race that takes your breath away.
Yeah.
However, can he replicate that kind of race, you know, going two turns against older horses again and again? Sometimes that might be his best race of the season. So yet to know on that. Cyberknife, I don't think, is nearly that fast, but he's certainly talented and showed it last race. Brad Cox always said that he was talented, he just hadn't put it all together yet. And then Epicenter, who I think is the leader of the division, you can see right here, that he's always tough, he's always right there, and better than this group.
Yeah,
I would put Epicenter 1 and Charge It 2 right now, looking at the three-year-old snapshot as we sit here right now, early August. Those would be my top two. Look, if you ran the Kentucky Derby 100 times, Epicenter wins at 90.
Yeah.
Let's face it. If you run the Preakness, in my opinion, 100 times, Epicenter probably wins it more often than early voting wins it. I thought he was the best horse in the Preakness. So it's almost poetic justice that he was able to show it in the Jim Dandy, and I think that's why he's going to be a solid favorite in the track.
I think a lot of people have him on top, which is kind of fun. But maybe, again, that is just a reflection of the three-year-old season this far with the two-second-place. And I'm with you, but the two-second-place finishes on the resume. But a lot of people still think he's just the most talented three-year-old.
To me, the Jim Dandy is – I don't know what to make of it. Halfway through the race, I thought Joel made a huge mistake. He's back last, going 48. I thought early voting was a cinch. But early voting packed his tent.
Yeah.
Epicenter came on. Maybe it's because the track is deep and tiring, as many people have said. Maybe it changes, maybe it doesn't. But I wouldn't just assume that Epicenter is the Travers winner.
I think it's going to help define the three-year-old picture, so it's going to be very fun to see how it does shake out. And again, the Pennsylvania Derby coming up a little bit later on. But as a homer, I'm happy that Travers is going to play into that whole three-year-old scene. Speaking of the three-year-old scene, we've spoken of the Derby. I'd like to get the opinion from each of you. We'll watch the stretch run the Derby again. And then I also had the guys pull up the overhead view, which had gotten, like a million views. Yeah. And it is incredible. Every correct move, everything goes right. But I'd love the opinion from both of you. I think I was validated in the Belmont. To me, this is a complete fluke. And he came into the Belmont and was working well, and I thought, well, maybe he's just got good at the right time. But I think the Belmont kind of validated it was fluky. And no knock on the connections. God bless them. They now have a Kentucky Derby under their belt. But your thoughts on the Derby and the result with Rich Strike?
So for a closer like Rich Strike, the first thing he needs is a toxic pace up front.
There you go. There you go.
Which he got. And then you need a hell of a lot of luck and a lot of riding skill. Sonny Leon rode this like a guy that's won the Derby five times before. I mean, it looked to me like he was pretty cool about everything. He certainly waited for holes to develop. If he goes around, he doesn't win, so he waits till the hole develops. You can see him right now about 3.5 off the fence right here, and then he takes a left-hand ease, eases in left-handed to go to the rail, and it's open for him. So anything less than this, he probably doesn't win. So all the things lined up, a perfect storm for him, toxic pace, great trip, great ride, and the horse ran the race of his life. But I think Randy and I both knew going to the Belmont that pace wasn't going to be anywhere near this, so the result probably wasn't going to be the same.
This is 100% about the pace. First quarter mile, 21.78. I mean, really, really weird things happen in a mile and a quarter races, especially like the Kentucky Derby, when they go that fast the first part of it, right? And even though Epicenter was 8 lengths back or whatever in the early part of the race, even that, with a pace that fast, even that is probably a little too close for comfort. I mean, you would much rather have wanted to be where Rich Strike was early in the race when the pace is that fast than where those other horses were. So that's what makes it a fluke, I think.
And reiterate again, Sonny Leon and the ride, just from a rider's perspective, everything does have to go right. But he was also making great decisions.
He was. Look, it's a little easier when you're under the radar and their expectations are low for a rider to just play the hand that dealt you. And, you know, when the holes are there, go ahead. He needed the horse to get to the holes, and the horse was there for him. So kudos to the training job and the horse. But he was very cool on that turn, waiting for stuff to happen, because he's still like 8 or 9 lengths behind at that point in the middle of the turn, and he's still waiting for something to happen so he can go inside rather than out. And to me, that was the difference in the race.
And when you're running an 80-to-1 shot, right, I mean, the mentality of Sonny Leon in that race was not, I'm going to win. Like, maybe I can get a check, maybe I can run for it. And as the race, but when you have a situation like that, Jerry will tell you, you know, at 80-to-1, there's no way in hell, you can win going wide. So you drop to the inside and save all the ground you possibly can, because you're up against the eight ball anyway in terms of ability, and hope that you can work out an inside trip and maybe get third or fourth. And then as the race progresses, he's like, oh, maybe I can get fourth. Oh, maybe I can get third. Yeah, it just worked out that way.
And you guys were live there for that, right? You were from everything I've heard. I was at the big teletheater down in Albany, you know, with a big Derby Day crowd there. And I had the exact, and I think I was not alone, and all of a sudden, and people were cheering, and all of a sudden it went silent. As I understand it, that's kind of the way it worked out live at Churchill as well.
Yeah, I think the only way you hit that is you do the top two favorites and all, you know, and box them. So very few people, I think, unless they were playing hunches, names, would pick Rich Strike.
Or they made a mistake. We know someone pretty well who went up and made a bet. And, too bad, you know, I came close, whatever. And they look at their ticket, they had 21. it was a mistake.
I also love that the official T-shirt didn't include 21 on it.
Oh.
The official T-shirt just said that.
He wasn't in the body of the race until Friday, so the whole backstory of even how he got into the race is pretty wild.
You can't make T-shirts that fast.
just before we let you go, we've kind of alluded to it already, because you guys bounce around and go to various tracks all around the country. Just reflect a little bit on Saratoga. You know, as I say, I'm a homer. I always like to get the opinions of people, because to me, I talk about it all the time. The track's great, the racing's great, but it's just fun to be around town and be at dinner. And people are talking about the stakes race tomorrow and the exacta they hit. And talk a little bit about how special Saratoga is.
Well,
he's the guy.
This is my favorite track to ride at. I won more races here, I think, than in almost any other track that I rode at. We had a home here for many, many years. And it's my favorite track to come to. The vibe in the town is awesome. We went to dinner last night, and it was just everybody coming by the table. I will, however, say one thing. They closed the Starbucks downtown.
Oh.
And that is very problematic for Randy Moss.
It threw our game off this morning big time.
That is the only complaint I have about Saratoga. I love it up here.
On common ground, so the local, they're okay.
Yeah,
but, you know, he got me hooked into Starbucks 16 years ago when we started working together in TV, and I'm a Starbucks guy now. Sorry.
So I'll say this about Saratoga. It's not exactly a revelation when I say that it's all about tradition.
Yeah.
Okay? But I think what maybe some younger people don't fully appreciate is that, Saratoga's tradition goes way, 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 way back. But really, the true heyday of Saratoga is right now.
Yeah, no.
It's right now. Because if you go back, like just the other day, I was going back and looking at old records. I've got old American Racing manuals. And I went back to 1968, okay, which was pre-OTB. Racetracks were successful based on the on-track business that they could generate. Aqueduct was handling, I think, 3.2 million a day. Belmont was handling 2.8 million a day. Saratoga, 1.3. Right? Monmouth was handling more than Saratoga. Racetracks in Chicago, all of them, even Washington Park, was handling more than Saratoga. Right? So, really, when you look in terms of the purse structure, in terms of the quality of racing, in terms of the national significance, Saratoga's never been better than it is right now and in the last decade or so.
No, you're absolutely right, because as I think about it, when I was a kid and first started coming here, you didn't even have to pay for a grandstand seat. You just went and sat down, put a newspaper on the grandstand seat, and that was your seat for the day. And there was talk, this was a little before my time, but there was talk about closing Saratoga, which is unimaginable at this point. But, you're right. We are in the golden age. You don't realize it until you get down the road a little bit, but if you think about it, we're living the golden age. I like that. We appreciate your stopping by. We certainly will look forward to the NBC coverage tomorrow of the Whitney. What's coming up on the NBC schedule for you guys?
The next race we do will be here for the Gold Cup, final weekend of Saratoga, and then the Champaign. After that, with a couple
Keeneland,
of races, Keeneland and Kentucky Downs, I believe.
Oh, Kentucky Downs, those Kentucky purses now are just insane.
I don't know, Saratoga purses are pretty
they're
darn good.
The allowance races for $105,000, the maiden races, I'm kidding. Randy Moss, Jerry Bailey, again, they're in town for NBC coverage of the Whitney this weekend. And as I say, it's fun to have you guys back after a couple of years where we haven't been able to get you in because you've been doing it remotely. So we appreciate the visit. Good luck.
It's a tradition. Saratoga. We got to come see you here.
I like that. I appreciate it. Again, good luck on the weekend.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, Michelle Giangiulio will join us. She had a nice winner with Tiergan the other day. We're looking forward to Seafoam, I assume, but we'll catch up on that. So stay tuned.
Juvenile fillies turf, 14 of them across the track. Wheels set on their way. End of the dance on the outside. Broke a little sideways with Bro KK, but meanwhile it's going to be stopped. But running on now, and Somali Lemonade's got eight to make up. They come to the top of the lane. Stop shopping. Maria's got a lot left. Stop shopping. Maria goes on. Sweet Cat is right there. Hard not to like. Royal Body is running on. Past the eight ball, they come. Stop shopping. Maria for the run. Still under a hand ride as they come to the 16th. Stephanie's Kitten coming out late. Yes, Stephanie's Kitten coming fast. Stephanie's Kitten, stop shopping. Maria. Stephanie's Kitten's worn out.
The chances broke smartly, but so did Terra from the Cape. On the inside, Sky Lantern the Grey going well. If he can get through, Sky Lantern the Grey looking for somewhere to run. Wide open. It's Terra from the Cape hanging on. Terra from the Cape tries to go all the way. On the outside now, here comes Flotilla in the light blue. Flotilla is absolutely flying. Watch the chances in there too. But Flotilla has gone right on by. And Flotilla is coming home to score. Flotilla has won it just about two in the end. It'll be Watch the Chances, Summer of Fun, coming on to finish there.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Friday morning. Again, thanks to Jerry Bailey and Randy Moss for stopping by. And thanks also to our next guest for stopping by, Michelle Giangiulio. We had her on here last year after her first Saratoga win, which was a stakes race. Nothing like kicking off Saratoga in that fashion. And maybe we'll see Seafoam again. We'll talk about that in a moment. But welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Happy to have you on board. And again, for folks who maybe weren't tuned in last year, we probably covered a little bit of this last year, but I always like to you know, we have a lot of people who are watching, and because it's Saratoga, they're new to the game and kind of getting in, and so I think it's fun to get to know the people behind the scenes a little bit. Talk about how you got into horse racing.
Well, I've been around horses my entire life. I grew up on a horse farm in New Jersey. My dad and my grandfather owned and bred thoroughbreds. Also, my uncle is Juan Carlos Guerrero at Parks, and he kind of brought me in after I was in the show world for a long time, and I knew I wanted to build a career in horses somehow, and got into horse racing through Carlos when I was in my 20s, and that's kind of where it all came together.
Show world riding?
Yes. I didn't do any professional training as myself as a show. I mean, I worked for a trainer, so I was basically an assistant. And so, you know, I broke horses and did just about every discipline you could think of. And it's just difficult to pursue a career in horse racing. It's very political, and you got to have a lot of money. So just wasn't really getting anywhere. And I was doing good as far as being competitive, but as far as building a career, it was much more difficult. So as soon as I came into horse racing, I kind of knew, like, this is where I want to be.
You participated in the Real Riders Cup?
No, honestly, I never got to do that. I wish I could, you know, if I had the time. I did deal with a lot of off-the-track thoroughbreds. I broke a few ponies like that and stuff, so maybe in the future.
It is a great career for some of those horses, great second career.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's. I love that program. It's really cool. It's definitely fun to watch.
And should mention, when I had Marshall Graham, who you trained for with 10 Strike, I had him on the other day, and we were talking off the air. He said, yeah, a little mishap, and you have your leg all strapped up. So just give us a little update on your leg.
Because
one of the side negatives, I guess, of horse, you're dealing with horses who are a little bit unpredictable.
They are, you know, when you ride, you always have the chance of getting hurt. You know, they're unpredictable animals. Regardless of what you're doing with them, you can always get hurt, even in the stall, you know. So unfortunately, I was just riding to the track one morning, and he was feeling pretty frisky, and we were right behind the morning line. We didn't even make it to the track, and he just popped up on me on the asphalt and slipped and fell, and we both were on the ground before you know it, and he landed on my leg, so broke my tibia in multiple places. Yeah, had to get surgery, had to get it rod and screws. So it's been a tough couple of weeks, but, you know, I think I'm a little more on the back end of it now. You know, it's still painful, still a lot of swelling, but it's starting to feel better. I'm moving around a lot better. So
again, you came up with crutches, but you got up here okay.
I haven't missed a beat. Horses are still being taken care of the way they all have. I missed one day out of training since I was out for surgery, and the next morning I was here. So
Marshall said yeah, she's going to hurt her leg, but she's right back at
I didn't miss anything, so doing good.
Let's go back and we'll pull up a replay because it was just a couple of days ago. You had a nice win for 10 Strike and Company, Marshall Graham, Tiergan. Marshall Graham is great at the claiming game, and you guys claimed this horse back at Belmont on June 26th. I would think with that date there was a Saratoga start in mind, and this is Tiergan getting it done. Chart margin winds up to be 10 lengths. Talk a little bit about the win, and talk a little bit about the claiming game, because you come back, and I guess they put the tag on the horse, and you know the horse isn't yours anymore, but you get the claiming price. First off, the claiming price, and the better part of a state-bred optional claiming allowance purse of $100,000, so it's a pretty nice day at the races.
Exactly, yeah, nothing to sneeze out there with that big purse. That was really awesome. I mean, horse was doing great. I didn't think we were going to win by 10 lengths, but he was certainly the best horse in the race. Best horse on the card that day, to be honest. He ran awesome. That was just so rewarding. It really was. It was great. And only my second start of the meet, so it was pretty awesome to get started like that.
Yeah, Irod Ortiz on board. He had been on board the race before, a close second that the horse was claimed out of. And as I say, I'm guessing the game plan, he moved into your barn, it was, hey, let's get a start up at Saratoga.
Yeah, I mean, we were going to try a couple of different spots with him, but this just set up really well. He was doing good. Figured, you know, I knew he was going to get claimed. Obviously, I won a 4 or 5 way shake when I went in for him, running back for the same price. So, you know, it sucks that you have to lose him. It's just part of the game. You know, I would have loved to hang on to him for a little bit, but there's not really much else to go on from here, you know, for the rest of the meet. So it was kind of the right spot to go. worked out well.
Playing box has really been on fire up here, too. I'm up in the press box, and, you know, we get word of the claims and multiple way shakes and whatnot. It's been very popular up here. But as I say, Marshall plays the claiming game very craftily, and this was certainly one of those with a nice purse the other day. This was also a one-mile race, came out of the chute. Any thoughts so far on races out of the chute?
Well, I had one run out of there yesterday that was tough because she needed to be on the lead and was in the seven hole, so it's tricky. You know, it was good with Tiergan because he doesn't need to be on the pace. So when you have a horse that needs to be on the lead, you really got to come out of there running, you know. So it's kind of an advantage with certain horses, disadvantage with some, you know. It all depends on what post you get, really. I'm not a huge fan of running right into the turn like that. Some horses like it, some horses don't. It's going to be... You know, you got to get lucky there.
Yeah, same with handicappers. Yeah. I mean, we're still kind of feeling it out, but it has the look of kind of what you're talking about. Talked a little bit about Seafoam with Marshall, and I mentioned when you came on that, you know, you got your Saratoga win last year with this one, which was first off the claim for Seafoam last year, comes up and wins the Evan Shipman. And I pulled up a replay of the Evan Shipman from last year, and we'll see Seafoam getting it done. And just reflect back. I mean, you come up to Saratoga, off the claim, and boom.
Oh, win, man.
At Saratoga in a stakes race.
It was incredible. Like, I wish I could relive that moment over and over. Like, there's just nothing that will top that. You know, to have that as your first career win was just, it's just amazing. There's just no other word to explain it. It was just incredible. I mean, I could go and win a Breeders' Cup, and I don't think it's going to feel... I mean, it'll feel good, but it's not going to feel as good as that one, you know? It was just so emotional and just so much hard work put into it. And to claim a horse like that and win a stake off of a very well-known trainer, it was a big deal. Yeah. It was a big deal.
And talk a little bit about working with Marshall. Marshall's great.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's so easygoing. He understands the game. If you have a horse that's not quite ready, he doesn't press you to run him, you know, he's been great. And the partners that we have too have been really, really great. They don't ever pressure me. It's a relaxing way to train. You know, they let you do your thing, which is awesome.
He's a college professor on the economic side. And he's a numbers guy. And when I have him sitting here, we go over some numbers. And is he tossing out a lot of numbers when he's talking?
Sometimes. I mean, I don't understand half the things he posts on Twitter. You know, I'm not a gambler, so... I sat with him on
Belmont. The odds and whatnot.
Yeah, I sat with him and his buddies on Belmont Day, and I was like, and they all had their computers, and I'm just sitting there watching them. You know, it was cool to watch. It was just crazy. I'm not a gambler whatsoever. So, but no, he doesn't throw too many numbers at me. He kind of knows my level of intelligence on that, but he knows that I know what I'm doing as far as when it comes to claiming and getting horse right. So he's been really good like that.
Yeah, very good. I pulled up another one from. Seafoam, because this was the season ender last year. We're going to take a look at the Alex Robb, and again, Seafoam is going to be the victor here. Seafoam, he's the number four horse here. Will win by half a length. And again, this was at the end of last year, the very end, December 31st. Last time he was seen, but nominated to the Evan Shipman. I saw he had a workout, yesterday, the day before.
Yeah.
How's he doing, and is the Shipman the game plan again this year?
Yeah, we're headed for the Shipman. He's doing great. I mean, I just took my time getting him back off the layoff. I gave him a couple months off. I continued to train him after the Alex Robb. We were actually going to run him in the, I think it was the General George at Laurel. And I just had a few issues with him. He's difficult to train on the training track at Belmont. So just had a few issues, just, you know, wasn't quite happy with how things were going into that race. So we gave him a couple months. He deserved it. And just been taking my time. I could have had him in the Saginaw. Probably would have been a great race to bring him back in, but it just wasn't quite there, you know. So I said, I'll just wait till we get to Saratoga. It's kind of unfortunate they cut it back to a mile. But I think if we get a good post, there doesn't seem like there's going to be much speed in there. I think he's going to be really tough to beat. He's doing fantastic.
Yeah, certainly off the race up here last year. And do you believe in that aspect? I mean, do you believe in a horse for a course kind of a thing?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he always trains good. He's just a good horse, you know, but he definitely likes it up here. I can see a difference in his attitude. Right now, he's really been, like, pretty aggressive. And since we've come up here, he just really tightened up nicely out of his last couple of breezes. I'm really excited to run him.
And where are you based?
Right at Harness Track. Yeah,
oh,
right
okay.
back here. Same barn I was last year.
So do you take horses out on clear course?
I do. I take a couple train out here every day. Teargan was one of them. I trained him out here. He was a little bit too aggressive on the main track, you know, did a little too much and settled really nicely out here. So that worked out really well. And I got a couple others. Seafoam's not one to train out here. He's not the kind of horse that would like, he probably would be too aggressive because the traffic does get a little bit crazy out here sometimes, but some horses just handle it well. He does fine on the main here. It's a little tricky once we get back to Belmont now that they're closing the main track. Yeah. So we'll have to figure something out. Yeah. But my exercise rider, exactly. My exercise rider does a great job with them too, so I think we'll be okay.
Talk a little bit about whenever I get trainers back here, just the difference Saratoga, and if there is a difference. But I assume because talking to trainers and owners, because there's, you know, understandably so, a little more of a social aspect to it. Owners like to show up at Saratoga and come to the backstretch. And so how does your day differ here as maybe downstate?
I mean, we start early in the morning, and I get done pretty early. So they don't really, the owners don't really, they try to stay out of my way, too. You know, they're really good about that. So, I mean, that hasn't changed much. And the harness track's pretty quiet, to be honest. You know, there's not too many spectators over there, which is nice. Barn area isn't as nice as the rest of the place, but it's doable. But yeah, I mean, just the atmosphere is different up here. But it doesn't affect me in my training in any kind of way. I love being here. I love the country. You know, it's kind of where I grew up in South Jersey was similar to around here. So, and some of the horses, you can definitely see a difference in them. Like Teargan, he changed a lot from when we got up here. Yeah, he just started, I mean, he put on a lot of weight from when I claimed him, and he was just really happy, and I don't know if it's because I mean, even Irad told me after the race, he said he's just a different horse today. I think he just really liked it up here. You know, he's just happy and came around at the right time.
And impressively so.
Yeah.
As well. You go out to eat. You have a favorite restaurant?
I've been out to eat quite a few times. Yeah, I went to Nove.
Yeah.
That was really good. And then I was at...
See, Anthony Stabile, he's a regular there, I think.
Yeah, he has his own meal on the menu, actually. It's called the Big A.
Oh, I did not realize. I knew he's a regular.
Marshall actually got it that night when we were there, yeah. Yeah, but I took my parents to Prime the other night. That was nice.
Very good.
That was, you know, it's always so pretty there. Mamma Mia is one of my favorite restaurants, though.
I love Italian food.
Yeah.
And I live here, and I haven't been there yet.
Oh, man, you got to go. Lobster raviolis.
Ooh.
They're my favorite.
Ooh.
Yes.
Two of my favorite things.
They're so good there. Yeah, they're so good there.
All right. It's on the agenda now. Michelle, we really appreciate it. And again, it's kind of been fun last year to get the stakes win and the nice win the other day with Teargan. And I'm sure much success in the future as well, being involved with Marshall. Again, he's a crafty player of the claiming game and beyond as well. But congratulations on the meet so far. Good luck going forward. We appreciate the visit this morning.
No problem. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
All right, Michelle Giangiulio, we will wrap things up here on this Friday morning Racing Across America. It's been a fun edition. Hopefully you enjoyed it as well. Great day of racing ahead, so come on up and enjoy the racing here at Saratoga on this Friday afternoon, or swing by one of the parlors, or fire up your Capital TV bet account and just enjoy it from the living room. But don't forget, we're back in tomorrow at 9 a.m. Handicapper Support, 10 a.m. for Racing Across America on a Saturday morning. So enjoy the racing this afternoon. See you tomorrow.
Generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922, 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Come on!
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops.
My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.